Computer. All right. So we're recording. So welcome to Zen Talks number two, everybody. Welcome back.
Do you do two like this or do you do two like this?
I like that too. That's like rock and roll. That's totally different. Rock and roll, two.
I do this.
Whatevs.
Two thumbs.
No, you don't. Okay. So here we are back with Zen Talks. It's good to see you guys. Thanks for joining us. I was just saying that if you want to type something and ask us a question, please do. You just have to click on chat before you do it. I also was, I got some emails from people that said, when we unmute you, when you ask a question, that then it's hard to hear us.
Audio goes down.
So this is what we'll do. If we unmute you, because you have a question, we are going to mute you when we answer. So that just helps with the audio for the people who are getting it emailed to them.
So this is Kathy, I'm Todd, and this is our thermostat, just in case.
Right, when we had our house redone, for some reason, the guy who did it, who we love, well, it wasn't him, it wasn't Jeremy.
It was Jeremy's subcontractor.
He decided to put the thermostat in the middle of the wall where
it's
couldn't...
big and it's bulky.
Couldn't put anything
You don't
else.
Get it.
Okay, then, okay. So
they care, Susan. They care.
Okay.
They want to know.
So I'm going to start with one thing and then we're going to open this up to questions. I wanted to say that for those of you who've been listening a long time or for those of you who are Wayne Dyer fans.
Oh, I love Wayne.
Yeah. Well, you know, he passed away last year. Was it last year?
Give or take.
So one of the things that he used to always say, it was actually a title of one of his books, was change the way you look at things and the things you look at change. And so I'll say it again even slower. Change the way you look at things.
Change the way you look at things.
Oh.
Sorry.
Someone's calling Todd.
It's
and
not
Karen.
My phone.
Oh, it's Cameron. She left her phone. Anyway, change the way you look at things and the things you look at change. Why is that so vital? Because a lot of times when we're getting questions about parenting or questions about anything for that matter, or even when we're trying to consider something, it's not about changing other people. And it's not about how you can become a completely different person. It's only about changing your perspective on something. If you change the way you view it, it naturally changes. If you can see, if you can open your mind, tomorrow's podcast, which we just taped, is about freeing your mind. If you can open your mind to that there are other ways to see this, everything changes. Correct?
That's right.
And so basically, the reason I'm saying that is because these Zen Talks, like answering questions, it's not that we have answers where we can go, here's what you do, and here's how you be different. It's, for me at least, I don't know if you'd agree, Todd, but it's about perspective changing. Like, how can I see this differently? What piece am I missing? What am I not recognizing? Because that's always my big prayer with everything in meditation, or just doesn't even have to be in meditation, is what am I missing here? What thing can I focus on that will help me see this differently? So that's my big share.
So we had some questions, and I think some of the questions I'm about to read are given by some of the people that are on the call right now. And I just wonder, so Liz, you're there. I don't know. Did you write a question in?
Yes.
Would you prefer me summarize your question, or do you just want to ask it? I prefer that you ask it. It's a little more interactive.
Liz is like, do I have a choice then? Liz is like, if that's what Todd wants.
All right. So Liz, I just unmuted you and I think everybody can relate to this. So would you mind giving us your two cents?
Sure. I hope I remember. No, I'm just kidding. I have a high schooler who is really attached to her grade. She's a freshman. And I really feel like at this point, it's part of her identity. And so I don't relate to it as much because her dad and I don't, I mean, we want them to do well and put in effort, but we don't expect all A's or anything like that. And so what I'm having a really hard time doing is she, I think, feels less when she doesn't get the grade she expects to get. And she sailed through middle school. It was really easy for her. And high school is different. She's taking honors classes. She's, you know, it's just a whole different ballgame. And so I'm really struggling with how to meet her needs as a parent of being okay with that's part of your identity, but also it's a, like, how do I help her feel that she is enough even when those grades aren't what she wants? And the other thing is I think that she's a procrastinator, but that's my own issue. Like I know that, like, you know, it's a lot of my own stuff there when I don't think she's doing what she should be doing in order to prepare for tests. So I think that was the gist of my two questions.
Yep, that was. So I'm going to mute you, Liz. We'll come back.
So you want to start?
Sure. I want to say that it's good that Liz understands her daughter and recognizes that right now, again, everything is always about right now, not like forever she's going to be identified by her achievements, but right now in her life, her grades or her achievements help her feel more either like herself or make her feel valuable. And that our job as parents is not to say to our kids, well, it shouldn't be that way, or you're doing it wrong, or, you know, make them feel bad about that, but acknowledge it as a real thing right now. So Liz, you might already do this, but even saying to her, I recognize that when, you know, a test score or whatever is not that high or not what you expected, that it really diminishes the way that you feel. And how can I support you in that rather than how can I get you to change the fact that it bothers you? And why? Because people change more when they're accepted than when they do when we're trying to make them different. So you're kind of coming in to support her in that place of, were you going to say something?
Well, in her email, she says things like, I'm proud of you and things like that. So I feel, and maybe Liz, you can raise your hand if you want to throw your two cents in, but I kind of feel like you're already doing that.
Well, it's not so much about that. What I mean is, in the moment when her daughter is being challenged, like she comes home and Liz sees that she's diminished, to say, you know, it's not about that I'm proud of you in the good times. It's I recognize that you feel diminished or you feel less than, even using those extreme words, like you just feel different if you don't achieve at a certain level. I recognize that. So how can I support you in that? Not how can I help you do homework better? How can I keep you from procrastinating? It's not about it's about helping her in the moment. It's like, how can I support you now? Because you already feel that way. Because going back and saying, well, how can I help you study more next time, is basically reiterating.
It's reinforcing.
It's
different messages. Because
exactly.
If we're saying we don't care about grades, yet you're helping her not procrastinate, you're
correct,
saying that you are caring about grades, when in fact you probably do care a little bit and you don't care a little bit. Probably a little bit of both.
Well, and it's like, Liz, it's like you're trying to care for her with her love language, or if it's not even a love language, by, you know, that grades mean a lot to her, or that helps her with her identity. So you're thinking, okay, then how can I help that, versus don't even get involved in that. But when she struggled, when she does come home and doesn't get what she wants, don't go to how she can study better. Instead, go to how can I help you? How can I help you feel, you know, what can I do for you right now? You know, that my old go-to, as you probably heard a million times, is how can I support you right now? What could I do? You want to talk through it, because the less you have advice, the more likely she'll stay connected to you.
So it sounds like you're saying accept, accept, accept,
accept, accept. And then she can maybe say at some point, Mom, this isn't working for me anymore.
What if she says, like, oh, well, just don't worry about it, I don't care about the grades. Do you think that helps or hinders?
I think that Liz has already made that clear to her. And so she's already got that information. It's now about how she handles, because again, I want to reiterate this for everybody who just jumped on. Right now, your daughter feels this way, but this may change. Everybody's looking for something that makes them feel whole or makes them feel valuable, or maybe has a leg up on other people, you know, that competitive streak where we're like, ooh, this is something I'm good at, I want to. And so there's nothing wrong with her feeling that way, but it's how we respond to it. Do we respond to it where we help her in a way to keep her in that mindset of competition? Or do we help her in, I know you're struggling with this, how, you know, what can I do to support you right now so you can breathe through this? And I'm being really general, because you know what the things that calm your daughter.
So I just unmuted Pat.
Liz.
Liz, what do you think? Does that help? What are your questions?
Yes. I mean, I think the hard part, I think with a lot of kids, and I think especially with teenagers, is that they don't know what they need in that moment. I mean, I think she has a hard time knowing what she needs. And so it really is, I just try to support her the best I can. I guess I'm getting my own stuff ahead of, like, worrying that she is too focused on that, you know, and that it's really her self-worth, and I don't want that to be what she feels worthy, you know, what makes her feel worthy. But what's helpful is you saying, that's just right now. That doesn't mean she's going to be like that her whole high school career. And that's the check that I needed of like, okay, just breathe and she will be okay.
There might be natural consequences. Like, so she's procrastinating and she's getting B's instead of A's. She could keep procrastinating, keep on getting B's, or she'd be like, oh, procrastinating's not working. And I'm not saying Liz should do anything.
No.
I'm just saying.
She's learning her own lessons without right. us having to teach them. So that's the piece where, like, that I was saying that we come in then as the supportive person who's watching all this, and maybe we have some, if she asks for advice, we can always give it. It's not that our advice doesn't mean anything. It's that she's already getting lessons, and we're there to support her as she's getting the lessons. And again, like you said, the box that is helpful to your mentality is, this is just now. I'm not setting myself, I'm not putting my child on a path where she's going to be such an overachiever, she's never going to find value in anything else, because that's not true. That's just right now. That's what's important to her. And you knowing that will calm her. Something I use with, especially my oldest daughter, I use it with all of them, is I don't always have good advice for them. I think I do, but I don't. And hugging and being so low-key about it.
Because they'll feel your energy.
You're just like, because you don't care about her grades. So when she comes home and she said, I just didn't do as well as I thought, you're like, ah, yep, you know, that's it. You know, it happens. And you're not making fun of her. You're not trying to act. You're just in that place of, this is hard and I'm here for you, but I'm not going to tell you how to achieve better. I'm just going to meet you here. Does that feel right?
Feels right. Liz, any parting thoughts before we move on? She's two thumbs up.
All right.
So Patty, I'm going to unmute you because you emailed a question. I think it's silly that I'm reading.
I agree.
Okay.
Patty's got a good question.
Patty's got a good question.
Hi guys. This is so exciting to talk to you. I have three boys. One of them's in college, is going to be a senior next year, and then one who's a senior in high school going to college. And then I have a little one, well, he's not so little, he's going to be a freshman in high school next year. My question pertains to my middle son and my younger son. They're very different. My middle guy identifies with being Mr. Joe Athlete. You know, he's a sports fanatic, typical kind of boy kind of stuff. My younger one, although I think he plays sports and he likes all that, and he's very involved with it, it doesn't come as naturally to him. And sometimes I don't know if he's identifying with it just because he's a boy and he thinks he needs to identify with that. But therein lies the clash with the two of them, because the older one, who is 18, kind of shames him a lot of times when he doesn't want to watch the football game or the basketball game, and he'd rather go watch whatever he watches or do something else. So my point is that I just don't want my middle guy to leave without them being a little more connected in certain ways. Like, he's not going to see him in high school on a daily basis, so he's not going to have that daily contact. And I think if he leaves with the way things are right now, not really connected, it's just a shame. So not that there's a panacea or something that he can do or that I can do that they'll all of a sudden bond on the same level, but I didn't know if there was like a discussion I could have with my 18-year-old to allow him to see where I'm coming from a little bit. And I don't know if you understand where I'm coming from either.
I do.
You do? Okay.
I do. Absolutely. And I would say that I absolutely think there's a conversation that is to be had. The most important part of the conversation, though, is not going into it thinking you're going to teach them how to be different. Everything is going to be different. It's not about going in and saying, you guys are doing it wrong. You need to connect. Here's how. It's just going in, allowing yourself to share what you are seeing without expecting a certain outcome.
Yeah, not telling him he's wrong. Just from your observation, this is what you see. And then let that be the platform for hopefully a discussion. I know 18-year-old boys may find it hard to have good, heartfelt conversations with their moms. Maybe it's easy, I don't know. But just try to get into that exploratory territory, as opposed to, you got to quit being mean to your brother.
Right. Those simple things that we do with our kids where we say, you know, here's what you need to stop doing and here's what you need to say. And if you want to connect, because the whole, like, if you want to connect thing can come off as like a guilt trip. You know, like, he's not going to feel connected to you. It's I kind of feel like this is on the show a lot. Todd and I talk about how when I hear the girls disagreeing or fighting, obviously there's part of me that's like, I don't want them to treat each other that way, or I don't want them to disconnect, or I don't want them, you know, to feel frustrated with each other. I don't really have a lot of control over that, but what I can control is how to help them. Again, remember, change the way you look at things and the things you look at change. How to help them maybe see the situation differently and then leave that there and see if that helps. Because every new information can shift a dynamic. And what I'm most, you know, focused on is how you're feeling. And if you're watching this kind of cringing, then you're not able to, Todd says I do this all the time.
She does this.
And really this is just communication, right? This is our chakra of communication. This is our fifth chakra. And whenever I'm not expressing myself, I do a lot of this. And it gives you an opportunity not to say, boys, you know, be different or connect, but to say, here's what I see. You will feel lighter just by sharing it.
Hey, how mean is the 18-year-old to the 14-year-old?
Oh, he's not mean. There's no physical. I think it's just the word. Sometimes we were playing golf yesterday for Mother's Day. I went to play golf with them. And he's just kind of like, oh, that's such a bad shot. Or you don't listen to what I'm telling you. And kind of that kind of stuff. So he kind of doesn't boost him up in the way that I would hope as an older brother he would do. But that being said, my 21-year-old is very good. And I kind of went through that a little with him. So I feel like I do know that there's light at the end of the tunnel, but it's just that my oldest one and my middle one were a little closer in age. So the difference in age is a little concerning because they're at different stages of their lives.
One thing that I would say is your point is well taken, that there is a maturity issue here, you know, where when they do get older, they see there's that empathy thing kicks in a little more where they're like, I don't really need to put someone down to feel good about myself. You know, hopefully we all grow out of that, you know, at some stage, not everybody does. But I also think that when you share with him, you know, with your son, who's, you know, the 18-year-old who's saying these things, say, I know why you're saying that. You're saying that because you care about him and you want him to do well. So you're not saying, wow, you know, you're really cruel. You're saying like, I know why you're doing that. As your mom, as someone who knows you, you just want him to have a better shot. You want him to be, you know, better at golf or whatever it may be. So I get it. But just also as a mom, know that that's not what he's receiving. He's just hearing that he's bad. So maybe instead give him a different kind of tip, or maybe bite your tongue a little bit on those negative comments. And I'm saying that because then your son knows you're not going after him. You're not saying you're doing it wrong, or because I think, well, I thought you were going to say that guys tend to do that to each other.
They do. Well, and we had Rosalind Wiseman at our conference and they talked about peer groups. And I know this isn't peer groups, it's mm-hmm. brothers, but there's three different categories of
teasing.
And there's a very benign way that boys talk to each other where we make fun of each other, but that's actually why we connect. So that's kind of the best category.
Case scenario.
There's a middle one where it starts to kind of dig a little bit. And then the third one is just outright bullying where you're just saying something for the sake of harming. And I wish I remembered what she called each of those three things, but would you say it's in category one where it's benign, category two, it's in the middle, or category three? And it sounds like it's somewhere between the first one and the second one.
It is definitely. There's not, no, he doesn't go after his character or his, you know, no, he's not. He's not a bully. No.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, you know, just focus on, you know, your 14-year-old, and it's hard to do this without being cheesy, but just remind him what he's good at. Like maybe he isn't as good of a golfer, or athletics doesn't come as easily to him, but every kid is good at whatever it is. And just focus on the strengths of your 14-year-old, maybe outside of when the 18-year-old's around.
And reminding your 14-year-old that the reason that his 18-year-old brother says this is because sports is his thing. So that's how he's trying to connect to him. That's kind of what I feel like is most important with our kids, or even with, you know, partnership, is let's dig down to why people are saying things. Let's not focus on the surface of he said it, we need to retaliate, or they need to be in trouble. But what's below that? And when everybody understands what's below it, they're less offended by it because they realize it's really, like you said, it's not a character flaw. It's just he wants to connect with you through sports. And when he sees that you're not as good as him, he's like, there's part of it that's love. He wants to build you up. And part of it is, dude, like, we're not on the same level. So there's a lot of love underneath it. ironically. So anyway, Patty, does that help?
Oh, absolutely. So okay. Helpful. Thank you.
Well, and just the last thing I'll say is just normalize it. I mean, this is totally like normal sibling behavior.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's what my husband says all the time, but I'm the only girl in the house, so I just don't get it.
Well, and Patty, that's the thing is I feel like there's a place for us in there is that there is normal sibling behavior, but that doesn't mean we don't investigate it. Mm-hmm. We can say this is normal and simultaneously talk about it because it is normal, but that doesn't mean we shut up.
Yeah.
It means, because I do that all the time when Todd's like, you know, all the girls are arguing about something or he's not even having a reaction. And I'm like, I get that they're doing it. I know it's normal, but I still want to ask questions.
Right. Because if you're stifling yourself,
that's
no good.
And that's what I was saying with Patty about if she feels stifled, then that's a problem in itself. So,
okay. Go ahead.
I need to answer a quick question that, Carrie, who couldn't join us today, she asked a question last time and we couldn't get to it. And her question was, and I'll try and be quick with this, is she emailed me because she's one of those people who's like a huge go-getter. And she's always, you know who I'm talking about, right, Carrie?
Yeah.
And she's always like trying new things and helping her kids with things and trying new cleanses and new shakes and new, she reads a lot of self-help books, which maybe some of you guys can relate to. And she's always trying to do. And she asked me, she said, how do you do all the things you do? How do you find time to do all these things? And when you don't find time, how do you feel about yourself? Like, how do you, because she's such a go-getter, she's having a hard time, like, relaxing unless she's achieving or learning something new.
Mm-hmm. She's a seeker.
She's a seeker.
And she's a doer.
She's a doer. And maybe many of you who are on today can relate to her.
We're both seekers and doers.
I would say that very much so. I would also say that it's kind of one thing you never want to do is compare yourself to other people. Because I think if somebody lived in, because she was asking me, like, Kathy, specifically, how do you? I think if somebody lived in my house and watched me,
she doesn't have a realistic view of who you are.
Correct. And a lot of times when you list things that you do, you'll look at the list and go, oh my gosh, how do you do all those things? These things do not happen every day.
We could look at her life, Carrie's,
yes,
and be like, how do you do all these things?
I think that the comparison thing is what kills us, where we make assumptions. We just talked about that on the show for tomorrow too. Remember, assumptions
make an ass out of you and me, but
yes.
I didn't say ass.
Yes, you just swore.
I said, did I say instead?
You said chump.
Chump.
You makes a chump out of
you.
Do you
guys notice that Kathy swears on the podcast more than
yes.
me?
Yes, I swear in life more than
she's
you.
She's a swearer.
Yeah.
Bad yeah. person.
No.
Yeah.
But I do. I use the F word more often than Todd does.
F word?
I do.
Kathy Cassani Adams uses the F word?
Yes. A lot. Yeah, look at that. People are like, yeah, me too. It works really well, doesn't it, you guys? It's like,
cuts to the chase.
And I use it in humor. I use it in when I'm frustrated. It gets it. But anyway.
Speaking of cuss words, we've talked about this on the podcast. Tony Robbins has a documentary called I Am Not Your Guru on Netflix. It's really good. And we saw him speak a few years ago, so it wasn't a surprise to us. But talk about a guy who's got a potty mouth.
He drops F-bombs the whole time.
But he's so smart because he uses the language to pierce through a situation very quickly. So there are times when sometimes an F-bomb is the best possible thing you can say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I'm still learning how to do.
You got trained. That's a whole long story. I'm not going to go into the history of Todd.
Ahead.
No, because I want to finish this thing with Carrie.
Oh, okay.
Is that the other piece that I wanted to mention is while we're achieving, part of our achievement or our success needs to be on having days where we don't do anything, because that's part of seeking too. And I think that's why I would say to Carrie, if she were to see me all during the week, she would see I have big periods of time where I'm doing nothing. I am playing word cookies.
What's word cookies?
It's an app that my daughters put on my phone and now I play it and it's fun.
It's addictive.
And I watched 30 Rock before bed, and I yesterday laid around on my butt, and it was Mother's Day, so it's not, but I have times where I do. Todd is more, he's more the overachiever than I am.
Well, and the one thing that I'm trying to get better at is that when I'm not overachieving and I'm sitting watching a baseball
yes,
game on TV, is to, because there's a part of my ego or my brain that says, you should be doing something right now.
Correct.
And that's such a defeatist attitude when I am watching the game, sitting on the couch, to like doing it instead of shaming myself that I should be doing something else. Kind of like if you have a piece of chocolate cake, a lot of us eat it saying we should not be eating this. Screw that. I was about to say the F word, but I'm not going to. Screw that and enjoy every last taste of that chocolate cake because
you're already eating it.
You're already eating it. You might as well enjoy it.
And, you know, that's really, again, I'll say it again, part of seeking or part of achieving, if, you know, and again, I'm just using these words because they're more common, is learning how to not do anything, too. And like Todd said, being okay with that, not only okay with it, but it's an essential component. One thing I do that's not really environmentally great is I take really long showers. And the reason I do that is because I am clear. There's nobody around. I can just do nothing. And I have all these like great downloads of information and ideas and thoughts. And Todd actually got me a little pad for the shower so I could write things down because all this creative stuff comes. And I just, and they're ridiculous showers. It's not about being clean. It's not about, it's not good for the environment because I know I shouldn't be wasting the water, but it's something that is important.
Do you shame yourself for wasting the water?
No, I'm just pointing that out because I do that just so someone doesn't say, hey, that's not good for the environment. It's like, I know I'm, you know, it's not the best, but it helps. And having, and those are just little things. I'm not saying that's the only thing I do. I'm saying that having the ability to do nothing is just as important. What's that saying that we always used to say? Don't just
do something, sit there. Don't just sit there, do something.
Don't just do something.
sit there. We actually did a podcast, and I think that was the title.
Yeah, and that's part of mindfulness. You have to have, so when people are like, how do you get everything done? How do you achieve? Part of that is by doing nothing part of the time. And also not comparing.
The Tao does nothing and leaves nothing undone. So not everybody knows what the Tao is, sweetie. What's the Tao?
The Tao is the way. It's like a philosophy.
Some guy named Lao Tzu wrote it, whatever, 1,000 years before Confucius. And it's 81 verses and it's been translated a million times.
And it's spelled T-A-O, not D-A-O, but T-A-O. And the Tao.
And there's a nightclub in Vegas called the Tao, the T-A-O. And I wonder if Lao Tzu was thinking about Vegas nightclubs.
I wonder if he hangs out there. Maybe his ancestors hang out in Vegas. Okay, so why don't we, does anybody here who's online live have a question? Because we have like 10 more minutes.
Either so one raise question. Your hand or type something so we know.
Julianne. There you go, honey.
Hi, Julianne.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Awesome. My question is about my 6-year-old daughter. Her and I kind of butt heads when it comes to food. Mm. And I realize 100%, thanks to you guys, that they're my issues. And I really want her to eat healthy, and she would prefer to eat nothing but junk all day long. And I find it really, really triggers me. I just get really upset about it. And I find myself, saying things like she'll be eating an ice cream cone that I allowed. And I find myself saying things like, but that's the last treat, you know, for the day. Like I'm like stealing the joy from the ice cream cone, you know, but I catch myself saying it, but sometimes I've already just said it. You know, so I try to do all these things like teach her about balance and healthy eating. And of course we can have an ice cream, you know, but let's make sure we eat our vegetables too. But I find myself really triggered by it. And, you know, I had some, never had a full, you know, eating disorder, but I had some issues with it, you know, in college. And I don't want to pass on these guilty feelings about food to her. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm not completely willing to be like, you know, eat whatever you want, like whatever, go for it. I'm just kind of struggling to find that balance between, you know, like, it's okay, like enjoy your food, but also like, let's make smart choices. So.
Totally. First of all, do you go by Julianne or Julie?
Julie. Yeah.
Okay, Julie, I'm going to mute you for 1 second and bring you back. Did you want to go first?
I'll go first. This might be the more masculine thing, but one is parent from the present moment. She's six. So I know it's easy to be like, yeah, but what if, you know, habits start early and all of a sudden she eats ice cream for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. She's going to have the same disorders that some other people do. She's six. Just have a mantra. She's six. She's six. The other thing is I want to normalize it. I struggle with the same thing on food and on technology. Mm-hmm. So I struggle the same way. Mm-hmm. And there's no right answer. And it's the gray. We talk about the black and white. The answer is in the gray somewhere. And you're never going to strike the perfect balance. The idea is to have the wisdom, the intuition to know when you're too far out of balance. Because you're asking the question, I'm guessing you're too far the one way of eating healthy and nutrition and all that. And I just would invite you that sometimes I do this with some of my clients is when they're struggling with something and they can't break a pattern, I invite them to do the opposite. So if you're about to say, you know, you got to eat
your last treat.
That's your last treat, or you got to eat your vegetables. Say, how about we have another ice cream cone? To shock your system a little bit.
How about instead of have another ice cream cone, you say, when you're about to say that's your last treat, you say, isn't that good?
Yes.
Because then you don't feel like you're feeding her more, yes. But you are, Todd's point is important, which is when you feel that thing coming, instead of saying it, and again, this is all mindfulness because it's hard to not, you take a breath and say, isn't that the greatest? I love ice cream too. Because you're, like you said, you've already said she could have it. So you're not doing anything wrong in that moment. You're helping her because really what you want to teach her is not you have to eat this carrot, but a relationship with food. Mm-hmm. And we had the exact same experience you did. We have three girls. I was very leery about how I talked about food with them because of all the, you know, all the challenges that you were talking about. I wanted to make sure I didn't give them my issues. I also didn't want them to feel bad about what they ate, but I also wanted them to be healthy. I mean, it's all these things. What I'll tell you is that if we can talk about balance, meaning that there's things we would always say, like we're having an ice cream cone. Like, for example, let me just back up. We do ice cream night on Friday night. So we don't do desserts every night. Occasionally they have peppermint patties or like a Hershey Kiss. It's not, we have candy sitting out all over the house. We don't hide stuff. But we are very like ice cream's on Friday night, not ice cream's on Friday night because you can't have the calories or, but it's just, it's like setting up our own kind of eating where we recognize these things are treats and they're not what gives us energy. I also talk to the girls about when they eat something and then they don't really feel good, or they eat something and they're like, oh, I have a stomach ache. I talk to them about how food is energy and that, you know, probably the reason you don't feel good is because of all that cake. I ate the cake too, and it just doesn't give us energy. It just sits there. I'm not condemning them or making them feel guilty. It's like acknowledging it and recognizing it.
But that's a very subtle, tricky thing that you just said.
I know.
Because our ego wants to say, see, told you.
And that's where Julie is going to catch herself. And when she wants to say, see, I told you so, she's going to say, I know, cake makes me feel that way too. You know what makes me feel more energized is when I have, you know, whatever you're having for dinner that night. If I have a little bit of this, a little bit, because what I want my kids to understand about food is that's what helps them get through the day. There was a time when we were growing up that we didn't even connect food to how we felt. Do you guys remember that? Mm-hmm. Like we're so far into understanding, like Todd had a buddy, a really good friend who had high cholesterol. And Todd said to him, well, are you going to change your eating habits? And he didn't even think eating was related to cholesterol.
No, he took a pill.
And so my point is instead of teaching them because it's about weight or about how they look, even though we all carry that, us girls grew up with that crap. So that's in there, but it's more about how food makes us feel during the day. And then that an ice cream cone occasionally is awesome because that makes us feel excited and their sugar can be so fun, but too much of it makes us feel.
Well, and I think the most important thing is that you have the awareness that this is your stuff.
Yes.
And this is not, you're not protecting her. You have an intention that you're protecting her, but really you have some work to do, and I'm not smart enough to tell you what that work is.
Well, and not work to do like you have a problem, but you're like the rest of us where you know it's yours. It's not that she has something to heal.
Right.
It's that she is a woman who grew up around the same time that a lot of us did, and we got really crappy messages.
Sure.
And so I'm going to unmute you, Julie. So Julie, what any other thoughts on that? Like, what are you thinking?
No, that's great, guys. That's absolutely kind of, you know, what I needed to hear. I think I do need to talk to her more about how it makes her feel versus I think I'm a little too controlling with the food. You know, like, okay, yes, you can have this if you have this. And I think I just have to be a little bit more, just let her go a little bit, you know, within reason, but talk to her about how it makes her feel. I love that. And I need to do a better job of that and stop myself when I start saying weird things.
and take a breath. And you can even say to her, I was about to like get all angry about that, but really I realize, you know, like we can be real.
Yeah.
We don't have to be like, oh, I can't say that at all. We can say, wow, I struggle with that. So I'm saying that to you when really the truth is enjoy that ice cream cone.
Well, and the other thing is that when you do screw up, because you're going to, just like I do and you do, is bless yourself and don't carry shame about it. And just know that you're working towards it. You're working on it. So
yeah, these kids of ours, man, they just tell us what we're still dealing with, because food and her is really just about you and food. Mm-hmm. And so what we get the opportunity to do is while parenting her, we get to be more self-aware. So it's like we get to do two things at once. And it's really actually great if we look at it more as an opportunity and less of a problem. Like, you know, really just changing the word, Julie, when you're struggling and she's eating something or you're worried about her eating, to say, wow, this is yet another opportunity for me to look at this differently. Perspective change, you know, change the way you look at it. But I just want you to know you're not alone, because I went through it with all three girls. But I will give you a light at the end of the tunnel story, is that because we kind of tried to play that balance game, not perfectly, and they definitely love sugary foods. We've caught all of our children in closets eating Halloween candy, like, you know, like we've busted them with stuff like that so many times. But they... now, like my oldest daughter and even my middle daughter, they make really good choices. Not perfect choices, but they're very conscious of what they eat. That's what I would say.
Practical suggestion. We've talked about the Vitamix. It's a kind of a high-end blender, and they're expensive. When Kathy came to me like, oh, I want to buy this blender, I'm like, oh, it'll be $40. Well, the sucker costs like $500, but now you can get like a refurbished one for like maybe less than $300. We've had a smoothie every day with a few exceptions for like the last 5 years. And we pile it with greens and things like that. But with kids, you can put mostly fruit in it and maybe put, you know,
some greens in it
and slowly build towards something a little healthier. That's like a totally practical suggestion. And it's not like deep, it's more surfacey, but it'll help.
But I like it because it might help Julie and it might help everybody else. Is if you're giving your kids greens in the morning through a smoothie and it has all this fruit, you're less stressed about them getting it later, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So Julie's nodding. So is that right? Like if you know she has something.
Yes, and I feel like I feel better, and it's crazy, but I do. I feel better if she's eaten some veggies. Then I'm able to relax, and I'm like, you know, eat ice cream. It's when she hasn't, and it's been junk all day, that I feel myself being like, you know, like, no, she can't have that. And it's like, at the end of the day, it's really matter.
And that's the balance, is the greens. I don't know. Well, I was going to say something, but it doesn't matter.
I'm just going to talk lots of times about greens.
No, whatever.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you, and I feel the same way. I can let go a lot more if I know. It's almost like checking a box. Like, okay, they got a green, you know, or they had a carrot, or they had something, and then check a box, and then you can kind of back off. And so when building a smoothie for her, and you can use a magic bullet, doesn't have to be a Vitamix, even though they're really great, let her choose what's going to be in it. And, you know, like one of my daughters likes bananas and strawberries, and the other daughter likes blueberries, and they build it so it's theirs, and then they end up drinking it, they feel better, and then when they're like, wow, I have more energy, and they may not say it that way to you, but you just notice they have a little bounce in their step, you say, the smoothie.
Well, and for me, it's my healthiest meal of the day because I'm getting a little bit better at you know, I eat a lot of meat and cheese and yumminess. So I know my breakfast smoothie is my most healthy meal of the day, and it takes the edge off when I am eating fries for dinner or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I do want to say that, because a lot of people just listen to this and they can't read it. Jennifer said a good resource for a healthy relationship between us and our kids is a book called Child of Mine by Axl Rose.
Say that again.
It was a joke, sweetie. Oh. Child of Mine. It discusses the division of responsibility of eating and feeding. Really helped me with dealing with my stuff instead of making it my kid's stuff. Jennifer, thank you for that. And then Millie said Rob Bell listed as one of his tips at the conference to get a Vitamix. The reason being exactly what Kathy said. You fed your kids the healthy stuff in the morning. You can relax. I love our Vitamix. That was the only way our daughter had any greens years ago. She's now eating veggies at 10 years old. That's exactly. The other thing. Julie, the fact that your kid will eat vegetables, I mean, that's like miraculous because vegetables when you're 6 years old is the worst.
Yeah, they're like,
forget about it. Like if they know what candy is, like think of the difference between candy and a carrot or candy and spinach. Like it's just, is this really edible? Like
right.
6 year olds, and maybe if they've never had candy, then they might think spinach is good. But no 6 year old is going to say, right. Oh, this is wonderful spinach.
So the norm, and this can be vegetables or anything, is we think we're doing something wrong when really they're having a normal childhood response. And our job is to learn how to have conversations about it, role model, and also find ways like the Vitamix or a magic bullet or whatever to feed it to them in a way that's more appetizing, that they can get it in their body. And you even say that to them, like, let's just figure out a way to get this in your body. Because it's almost like vitamins. It's like, it's not, you need to eat this way so I feel good, but let's figure out a way to get vitamins in a way that we all enjoy.
And maybe bring her in on the making of it.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Like, you want strawberries or blueberries or both, or milk or coconut water, you know, lemon juice, lemons, whatever.
Yes. So thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Julie. So it's 12:42, so I think we're going to shut it down.
I know. I just wish we could, like, the reason we're sticking to, like, the 12:40 thing is because people, like, they're on lunch breaks, and we want to make sure that we stay, we do what we say, and we don't just keep going. But if you came with a question and we didn't get to it, email us, especially if you're going to be on live, we'll go to it first. Mm-hmm. You know, say, I'm going to be on live, but I want to make sure you get to the question because we want to make sure we serve the people who are showing up, you know, at noon first.
Yeah.
And also, does anybody, if you're on screen, does anyone have anything, a question they want to ask? Not a big one that we're going to answer, but something about just Zen Talks that we can answer for you, or just raise your hand.
Like logistical, you mean?
Yeah, anything. Like if there's something you want to make sure you told us.
Or you could type it in the chat box. So, because Kathy and I are winging this and I'm having fun. Hopefully you guys are too.
Yeah, we're going to get better.
But if there's something that you'd like to see, we don't know. So you got to let us know how we're doing and what can make it better. So,
So thank you. And so thank you, you guys. Again, just as a reminder, just bringing it full circle. Again, everything about parenting and about your own lives and about self-awareness and your partnership, it's not necessarily about changing the people, it's changing your perspective. I actually, in Marianne Williamson said that what a miracle is by definition is just a shift in perspective. Mm. It's not about something magical poof happening, it's that we see it differently and then everything changes. And so just as a reminder, just consider your perspective on something and ask for support or help or bring your questions here and we'll work on perspectives together, okay?
Keep trucking. Adios.
Bye, everybody.
And doctor.